What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either. Really. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Happy Monday.
I think I'm going to just start us off with a story. And the story goes like this. Otto and I are meeting a couple of other families from school at a playground after school. And I'm like feeling really proud of myself for being the mom that would show up to a play date and socialize with parents I don't know very well. And we show up at this playground, and one of the other moms, it's two other moms, pulls out like a beautiful little picnic blanket and spreads it out on the yard. And I'm like, oh, wow, how cool that you have a picnic blanket. And she's like, oh, I just keep one in my car in case we ever need to have a picnic blanket. I'm like, cool, makes sense. And then both of the other moms pull out these little backpacks with coolers inside of them and like protein drinks for their kids and fresh watermelon and all of these nutritious protein packed snacks. And my kid looks at this beautiful picnic spread and he's like, I want some. I'm hungry. And I'm like, good news. I brought you nothing. I brought you not a thing, not a snack in the world. And so like all the generous parents around us are like, oh, have some of our watermelon. And then my starving child like wolfs down like half of the snacks that are spread out for everyone. And I'm just like, oh, this familiar feeling. Why is this familiar feeling? Why am I always the one who shows up feeling like a teenager? Like I'm the fifth child and the two moms are taking care of all of us. And I think I'm like, what is the heart of this? Is it jealousy? Is it comparison? What is the thing that comes up for me when I am around other people? And why is it such a default for me to feel like I am wrong? And the way that I know that I'm doing it wrong is because I can see it compared to the people around me. So whatever we call that, the comparison game, the feelings are twofold because it comes up for me and I'm like, oh, I'm the worst. And now as a parent, it's like double worse because it's not just affecting me. It's affecting this beautiful child who deserves snacks, who deserves protein snacks. And I can't for the life of me show up for it. And then there's also this second wave of emotion, which is like, how am I still feeling this? Like, how have I not worked through this feeling? I can literally remember this started when I was in second grade, the feeling of looking around me and being like, oh, I'm wrong. I'm not just doing it wrong, but I am somehow wrong because look at all of these people. That's how it should be. So this is what the conversation I wanted to bring forth today, to talk about what it is like to have a brain that is constantly evaluating self based on what you see around you and how to navigate that and move through that. And I'm curious how this is for you or how that shows up for you, or if you have a different pattern in your brain. Like, does
feel so resonant. I feel like mine is like how I'm being perceived. Like a lot of my shame comparison feelings are like imagining what other people are thinking about me,
mm-hmm.
which sometimes that's a projection and other times I feel like that might actually be true. I actually have a friend that I hang out and do, like we do play date stuff together often. And she now just like tells me what to bring, like reminds me because of the amount of times that Charlie has ended up in like her kids' pajamas that just happened to be in the back of her car because he got soaked and I didn't bring the appropriate outerwear for him. Which she and I are such like good besties that it feels, I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, she's just going to tell me what to bring. So that feels good. I feel like I'm either like super prepared and on it or just like totally not. Like when we're talking about the like picnic moment, and it just has, I don't know, it just has so much to do with like how I'm feeling or what my capacity was that day. I just walk around all the time feeling like a child. Like all the other parents are grownups and they know what they're doing. And I am a child.
That's like, I'm the extra child that showed up. And can my kid, we're at the pool. I didn't bring a towel to the pool. Can we use your towels? Oh my God. Like what is that? And I would like to point out that Micah, my partner, the father, who the great joke is always that the dads are the ones who don't know, Micah is always bringing a towel and he's got the little backpack and he knows what to put in it. And this is one example, and I bring it up because it's fresh and it's recent, but there's a lot of ways that it shows up for me. And I think some of these moments that come up feel like built into the experience of disability. Like there are endless moments throughout a day when the way that we're doing things just is going to look different or function differently. And I think even in ways I can't quantify or calculate or even point to. But I think that we are just like fundamentally embodying something different. And it's something that like I will think that I've worked through. And then suddenly I find I'm sitting in a playground with like throbbing shame and I've not worked through anything.
I wonder what are the things that you are incredibly good at doing with Otto that the other parents are not good at?
It is funny to me because I feel like in this game of comparison, I am never paying attention to the things that perhaps I do well and that other parents might look to me and think I don't know that anybody does that with me, but I'm never thinking that way. That's never how my brain operates. Maybe part of it is I tend to think that the things that I do well are not things that a lot of people value.
I feel this just in my like regular way of life. I was talking to my therapist about it and I was like, I am just not good at doing the boring basic stuff. Like I just feel like the things, the like adulting, the everyday things that we're all supposed to be doing that somehow everyone else seems to have on lockdown, like how anytime I walk into someone's house, their bathroom is clean. I'm like, how did you do that?
I know.
When and how and where. But I feel like I'm pretty good at like emotional regulation and like being present for moments and slowing, like, you know, all the inspirational videos that's like, you have just like be with your kid or whatever. And definitely there's like so many times where I'm just like distracted and not present with him. I think I'm good. Like those are the things that I'm good at. Like us sitting down and drawing together and talking about our feelings and having like really connective bedtimes. But those are like soft skills.
Well, yes. And they don't always look like they don't always lead to an image that looks
shiny on the outside.
Yeah, or like pretty bathrooms or like things you can quickly observe with your eye. And again, I don't know if this is what anybody else is thinking at all. Anyways, I don't even know what people are thinking, but it's fair. I think it's fair to assume that some people are thinking, what a mess. Look at these messy people showing up. And how can she not think of bringing snacks for her kid? Okay, so there's the moment when you show up and you're like, feel like the child in a room full of adults, and that's one kind of comparison. Like, are there other ways that this shows up for you where like comparison can be this cruel, cruel, painful thing?
I think on the other side versus this like shame feeling is this jealousy, which I think could be tied to it, but for me, they feel kind of distinctly different. So an example, my little sister lives across the street from us and we have kids who are a year and a half apart. So there's a lot of similarities in where we are in life. And also we have really different access. We have super different access to childcare. We have super different access to financial security. We have really different living conditions. Like we both, like our living, like the size and capacity of our homes and how those meet our needs are really different. And so she and I can get a little, I think we can both easily be jealous, envious of the things that the other person has.
What are the things that your sister would be jealous of for you? Like, because it's mutual. There's like different sets of things.
There's mutual jealousy, yes, between us. I would say that she is jealous of my access to childcare. If anyone ever looks at me and is like, how is Caitlin doing it as a parent? I have the kind of childcare that when I send my kid off, I am essentially sending him to a second set of parents that I trust to make any and all decisions. Over the summer, we did a nanny share with someone that I completely trusted, adored. It was different. I was constantly checking my phone. I was always really aware of time. There was a level of thinking about Charlie that never left me while he was with the nanny. And that is not how it feels. Like there is zero mental load. When he goes off with his grandparents, the mental load is gone. I release it entirely to them. And so that kind of access to not only like consistent childcare, but just like complete ease is something that she's incredibly envious of naturally, because it is like, it is amazing. It is the list of things that that affords me is innumerable. I, on the other hand, am jealous of her financial security. She married someone who works a kind of job where they're steady and stable. We just have different financial securities and expectations placed on us. And so that is an area where I can be envious of her. Also, her husband cleans house without needing to be told to, which makes me very, very envious. And then back on the other side, I have a big backyard and a house with more space while she's living in an apartment while they're like working to get a house. There's so many ways that we look to each other. And so what was helpful was for us to name where we each had abundance and where there was lack. And then what are the ways that we can help like fill in and support. There's so many times she's dropped groceries at my house because I was like, I mean, we're fine, but she would know that like we were roughing it until we got paid again. And she would just like drop groceries off or like spots me for dinner. And I like am offering childcare. Yeah, I think naming what you have and really appreciating that and like leaning into it and accepting it and then just understanding that there's other areas that are not as fulfilled.
Especially when you're living closely alongside someone, to be able to see so clearly like, oh, there you have ease in this area that I have great strain can be kind of like work its way into your brain and become a lens almost that you like see things through. And
it's really easy to see where someone has something that you lack because you're like needing the thing and then you see someone else.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to the reverse. It's easier to see what someone else has that you lack. It's harder to like actually recognize the thing that you have that's creating ease. It's weird how it can become invisible.
Or if you are able to recognize it, how that can elicit so much shame.
For having it,
you know? Yeah, like I often feel a lot of guilt for the amount of just like ease of childcare that I have and what that gives me. But if I can pause and be like, this is the thing that I have, this is the gift I've been given, and it kind of helps neutralize the other things that are a little harder because I can be like, okay, this thing might be hard, but look at this space where I have so much abundance. Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
That kind of reminds me of another piece of this comparison that comes up for me. And you and I have not talked about this a ton. Just in the last, I don't know, like 6 months or so, it's been, I've been noticing myself have sort of like a reaction to witnessing people having babies. And of course, like you and I doing this part of life alongside each other and literally having a conversation around this time last year that was like, should we have a second baby or not? And for our paths to go in different directions, it's such a weird feeling because I am like genuinely thrilled about this new person you're making and like genuinely cannot wait to know them and learn who they are. And also, oh my gosh, I'm just really sad that we're not doing it, that we're not, I am really sad that I'm not feeling the baby kick and that we're not preparing Otto to be a sibling. I think that he would love that, you know? And so there's also just like the pain of living near someone who has something that you do want. And it reminds me of that conversation we had with Emma, like early podcast conversation that we had with Emma about miscarriage and like being surrounded by people who are experiencing the thing that you are trying, so, in Emma's case, trying so hard for. How complicated that is, and how you don't want the person to pretend, you know, hide that or pretend like, or diminish the joy of the thing. And also, like, how do you hold on to both of those emotions, let alone let other people know that you're feeling it? And do you even need to let anyone know that you're feeling it? You know, like, so I think that's another recent layer to the comparison. Is just noticing like a genuine longing for something that we don't have and figuring out how to move through that in a way that feels right. That feels different than the picnic blanket protein snacks piece of it.
Well, because one feels external. It's like you feeling like you're not measuring up to someone else's expectation or like... just feeling shame versus something that you deeply want, are choosing not to have or can't have, and seeing someone else have it. Like, that feels really different.
Yeah. I think also what feels a little complicated to me in terms of like naming it and saying it out loud is like a lot, there are like several reasons why we're not going to have another baby, but one of them has been like grappling with the real limitations of my body. And in the world of disability, it feels like less encouraged to grieve the limitation of your body. And it's much more encouraged for us to point out like all of these external forces like inaccessibility or social stigma. Like, the problem here isn't me. The problem is, you know, society making disability shittier. And so like saying like, I'm really sad that my body is a certain roadblock to something that I want feels like, oh, you're not really supposed to frame it that way. But that's how it feels. And
well, that feels so fucked up because it's just true. It just is.
Well, and like, it feels like It's also interesting to me that like lots of people trying to get pregnant find themselves in that situation where like your body eventually becomes the thing, like often eventually becomes a thing that like makes that difficult. And I do think that there has to be something useful about looking at that and processing that and acknowledging it as it is. And anyhow, there's a lot of strands to this comparison brain. And I think I'll preface this by saying, I think that because I have spent so much of my life digging these grooves in my brain to compare myself and to others, and knowing the pain of that or the distress of that practice, I think my main tool that I've developed is just to like clobber it and be like, stop that. Like, don't like get away from this feeling as fast as possible. And I what I have been thinking about more recently is like a more of like a mindful sorting and awareness of like what these different what the feeling is that's coming up. And then once we recognize like what is this actually about, then we can move forward in a different way. And so the thing that I've been asking myself when I have a moment that comes up where I'm distressed by this point of comparison between myself and others, is this something I can or want to actually change about myself? Is this something I don't actually want to change about myself and maybe just need to settle into like being different in public and being seen as different? And then is this something that I really can't change and need to just let myself grieve in some way? And I found that helpful because in thinking about the jealous moment that I had at the playground with the moms who pulled out the refrigerated nutritious snacks, I think part of what I felt ashamed of was that these parents were anticipating their kids' needs and like meeting them and this tangible expression of care. And if I really dig into like, what is this actually about in this moment? I think to me, it is like wanting my son to know that I've got him, that he's not going to be abandoned or that his mom is like not going to care for him. And so I think in that way, I can start thinking about that differently and think like, are there other ways that I'm doing that? And can I lean into those? Or can I really like really try to do better at like remembering, trying to think before I take him to a play date, like what would he need? So that's a strand of it. But then like another thing that comes up for me a lot in the comparison, and I think there are like a lot of ways that I compare our family to other families in terms of like class status.
This is one of the hardest ones for me.
Right? Oh my gosh, it's so hard. And for whatever reason, it comes up a lot for me in the cars that we drive. Yeah, I think so. I mentioned like on the front end that I specifically remember when this started for me, like this awareness of like, oh, others are different and maybe they're doing it right and we're doing it wrong. When I was in second grade, we moved from like tiny Manhattan, Kansas town to like Johnson County, which is like the like much more affluent suburb of Kansas City. And I remember it was the middle of winter and I was trying to tell a joke to my new friends about how on the way to school, it was so freaking freezing that something was frozen in my car. And I was like, talking about how like it was so cold on the drive over. And this new friend of mine just said, oh, it was cozy and warm in our car on the way to school. And I remember being like, what? Like people have working heaters in their car? And like,
oh,
why don't we have a working heater? And now I must never tell anyone ever again how broken our car is. So now I show up to school pickup with my, 2007 car that has almost 250,000 miles on it. And like, there is a gash in the middle of the bumper that I will not fix. And they're like, the side of the car is literally starting to fall off now. And there is nary a car that even comes close to the status of my car in the school parking lot. And I am very aware of this every day. And so I ask myself, is this something I can or want to change about myself? Or is this something I don't actually want to change about myself and can grow in my tolerance for the feeling of being quite different from the people around me?
What is it for the car?
Yeah, the truth is, as weird and contradictory as this sounds, Caitlin, I am so fucking proud of that car. I just bought a bumper sticker that says 250,000 mile club that I'm going to put on that car.
Yes.
I am so proud that this car has made it with me for so much life. I have placed a bumper sticker above the gash in the bumper that says, "Be alert. The world needs more alerts." This like making a joke about how I literally backed into a dumpster and gashed my own bumper. Yeah. So I'm like literally technically I'm very proud of the fact that this car is like an artifact to me. It's like a piece of artwork. It is fantastic. I love it. And so this is actually something, and it aligns with my values. Like, I don't think we need to buy a new car. I feel like this car is working great and we don't need to spend money on a new car right now. It meets the needs of our family. And yes, I have literally gashed the control panel of the passenger side door out with my wheelchair as I transferred in and out of this car for the last 15 years. And if anybody sits in the passenger seat, it does look like I'm trying to kidnap them because they can barely get out. But usually my wheelchair is the only thing sitting in the passenger seat. So who cares? Anyways, I technically, if I think about what I actually value, this car is a perfect example of what I value.
So, okay, I feel like you've given three examples for the three things. So the car is like, you feel some discomfort, but it actually aligns with your values. So you just have, your work is to release your shame around it.
Yes.
The other one about the picnic blanket was that actually underneath this, like, I think the surface piece of that is you being like, oh, embarrassed because the other moms might think you're not as prepared, right? But if you go underneath it, the core of it is that you want Otto to feel deeply cared for and you want to anticipate his needs in ways that makes him feel grounded. Okay, so you have a really actionable thing. You get a like Tupperware full of Costco snacks that you just always have on hand. But then the baby one is something that you want and can't have. And so there is grief. And so your work there is grieving that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the hard, that's maybe one of the harder, well, they're all hard for me.
It's the most impossible. There's no solution. The other ones are like, okay, we can kind of solve this problem, but there's no solution for grief.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think that what I have been doing is like really in order to get away from the feeling, I'm really scrambling towards like, but this is great about what having an only child is. And this is a narrative about like this narrative could help make it feel better. And maybe there's a place for that eventually. I don't know. It feels really bad to be just like, nope, now I'm just going to be sad. You know, like I don't know what it looks like to let yourself grieve, I guess.
I think I keep thinking about that, the poem that I read about, like, either way, it will be glorious and unbearable. And I have definitely thought about the fact that we took different paths. And I've wondered, as I'm like preparing for what it is for us to bring a baby into the world, the amount of times I've said no to like projects or opportunities over the course of the last like couple weeks or months, because I'm working so hard to not overcommit myself. But I'm really aware of like what I am doing to my, like adding more restrictions to my life. And I did it on purpose and I chose it. And I also have been having some really big question mark feelings and looking at you and other people who have one kid and being like, oh, it could have been like that. It could have been easy, which I'm not comparing. Like, that feels very different than the grief that you're feeling.
No. And I mean, like, that's what's interesting is, like, to me personally, and I don't know what I would advise other people in similar situations to do, but for me, there is something constructive, I think, in allowing myself to slip into alternate POVs and see it from another angle.
I feel like you have to name it, especially if you're close. Like, I think we have to name these things together and both sit in the discomfort of, like, it's hard for me to hear that you're sad, that it's just hard for me to know that you're sad and to know that I have a thing that you want. Like, I feel sad about that.
And I don't want you to feel sad. So then I'm like, I never want to talk about it again.
But like, what a missed. Like, I don't want us to move around this pretending like this thing is real. And I am gushing and talking, and so much of my life revolves around this, and you are in pain, and both of those things are true at the same time.
Yeah, I guess my impulse, I think, with every single layer, like one of these layers, is like, I don't ever want to talk about this with anybody. Like, I don't ever, you know, in part because I think it feels like wanting to control the dynamic. So it's like, I don't ever want you to feel sad for me. And I don't ever want you to not, I mean, it's just what Emma was saying in the miscarriage episode. Like, I never want you to put a cap on expressing the wonder and beauty and joy of this person, you know? And so that drives me to like never say it out loud.
But I feel like on the other hand, like, I don't want you. Or Emma and I have been having conversations about this because she and I have been working really closely together, and I just keep getting visibly more pregnant. And that is hard. That is hard for her. And we have named it, and we haven't like gone in depth about it, but it is a part of our relationship, is that I have a thing that she doesn't, and she's grieving.
Yeah.
And I think if we don't say it out loud, I don't want, as much as you both don't want me to tamper how I'm feeling around you, I don't want you to do that either.
I think maybe one of the immediate impulse is like, let's not talk about it because I don't want you to have this reaction and I don't want you to think of me this way or whatever. But I think, so that's like you're making it, there's like an impulsive reaction for an immediate reason. And I think maybe the toll that is slower and harder to see is like, what does it do to a relationship to not talk about something real and happening within the relationship? You know, like, what does it do to a relationship to not name a thread like that? And I don't really know. I suppose it like depends on the context. But I also think it probably depends on like the relationship between the two people. And it sounds like maybe it also has the potential for like deepening or strengthening the possible trust between two people. I still, even as we're talking about it, there's a part of my brain that's like, pull it back. I wish you hadn't said it. I wish you weren't talking about it. You know, like, I think that's just so deep in me to not want people to treat me differently, not have anybody feel sad for me or worry about me.
And I think we are so conditioned to move away from the hard thing, like that for you to experience or express like grief or sadness, that then everything has to change and just be about your sadness. Like that couldn't be an integrated piece of the puzzle, or that somehow like stunts my joy or even my grief. I think the thing that I have felt embarrassed expressing both to you and Emma is like how, like when I'm struggling or not okay, because I'm like, you have this fucking gift. And I think there's nuance and space in that I think there's value in us being aware of what the other person is experiencing and not like shredding them emotionally. So like you two aren't my first call when I'm like having really irrational freakouts that like I reach out to someone else. And also I don't want to hide that that is also real and what's happening to me. So I talk about it with both of you, but I'm not going to like be texting Emma in the middle of the night having a panic attack over like getting to have this beautiful thing that I've wanted. You know, I also, even with all of my abundant childcare, access to that, there are still times where I'm like, I don't fucking have the care that I need. And sometimes I express that to Kirsten and sometimes I try and hold that in because I know that I have so much more than she does. And sometimes money is weird and tight for her and she expresses that to me. And sometimes I side eye her, you know, when we're sisters, so we can, or siblings, so we can be like, okay, shut the fuck up.
Okay, I have two thoughts as you're talking about that. One is this kind of makes me think that it's actually really helpful to talk to each other about like what it feels like, because that idea of like you needing to rein in that, I don't know if complaining is the right word, but like whatever, you know, like you needing to rein that in, I don't feel like I need to be shielded from that. And I think some people maybe would feel that. And I don't feel that way. I think, to be honest, I think that like you being honest about the pain of that is a little soothing to me, because I'm like, oh, you know, like I'm not having to worry about this. That's kind of nice. You know, it helps me see the both end of it in a way. But I think that could be really particular to everyone. And some people would not appreciate that. And I could totally see that as being valid too. So that sort of feels like an argument for like sort it out with each other so that you know. And maybe that's something that would change, right? Like maybe that's something that would, you could fluctuate with time. But that's my first take, is like, oh, don't shield me from that. I'm here for that. I think that it makes sense that there are layers to both of our experiences and that neither is entirely blazing joy or constant overwhelming grief, that it could be more than one thing. The other thing I'm thinking about that might be appealing to me about us looking at this up close together is it almost feels like an art project, like a living art project, right? Like if I believe in value so much that so much of life is both and, how cool for us to practice that alongside of each other and letting both of those things be true and full and dynamic and changing and shifting at the same time. There's something very exciting to me about that, just like as an exercise and as like a,
it's like a performance.
Yeah, like performance art. It feels like performance art in some way.
Yeah. And it feels like script building and understanding. I think we flatten each other so much. If I can't share the fullness of who I am with you, then I've flattened you only into one box of grief or sadness or something, like that I couldn't see or hold all of you in all of the complexity. Like no one wants to walk around being like the only thing that anyone sees is your hard thing. Like they want to see all of the,
yeah, this is many things. And it's shifting, and it's some moments feel really loud and sharp, and some moments feel like just a gentle wave in the back. And I mean, that's my experience of disability too. I mean, it's the same streams where so often disability is like, it's like too hard to look at, so we must make it trite and palatable, or we must make it devastating and horrifying, as opposed to being able to move with both of our hands open and sort of seeing what is actually in front of us at any given moment. So that's kind of an interesting, exciting way of thinking about it to me. And as we dig into it, it feels quite different than some of these other points of comparison.
Yeah, but I think at the root of them is could be like running away from difficult emotions, like shame. Yeah, I think some are more surface level and some are deeper, but the way to move through either of them is to like dig underneath and understand.
Yes. Yeah. And I think getting used to being a full present human out loud, because part of it is being witnessed as I am and growing and a sturdiness around that. I have one more story I wanted to share. After I had the playground picnic protein snacks moment, I had another experience on a playground. We had like our back to school picnic, and there is this new kid in Otto's class that I am like low key really want Otto to be best friends with. I've just picked up some good vibes. And I was like looking for this kid's parents like the whole back to school night. And I like awkwardly slowly approached them and I was like, are you this kid's parent? And chatting with this mom, and towards the end of the conversation, she said something like, well, yeah, I'm always looking for the kids that have dirty clothes because I know that like we're going to be a good fit or something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had not been thinking of it that way, that like living my values out loud, even in ways that are uncomfortable or very different from everyone else in the room, can be a sort of flag that I'm throwing up to say like, where are my people? And if I am like constantly trying to match the people around me, that I'm not going to find those people, or I'm going to be like finding the people that I actually keep me in this loop of chasing the matching game that I am forever finding myself failing at. And so it was kind of this beautiful picture. And it also reminded me of our conversation that we had with Amelia a while back, where it's like, can we make friends without social media? And Amelia said something about like, think about all the ways that we used to express ourselves before we had like a Instagram profile to like name our values. So like, how can I tangibly, visibly express who I am and who our family is out loud to throw up all the flags to say like, this is who we are. Come find us where, you know, like whoever wants to be a part of this. And hopefully that can make other people who also match us feel safer to be themselves also.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's my last picture of a sideways way to move through this that maybe can feel sturdy and possible. It's like thinking about our dirty clothes and our junky car and our haphazard way of moving through the world, our playful, we're literally rolling our way down the hallway out of school. This is who we are. If you want to be friends with us, we're not hiding it, you know?
And that, I think the one of the gifts of that is the sturdiness within you that would invite other people to stop perform, like to feel like they don't have to perform and match all of the other things. Like I wonder when I see the parents show up with all the perfectly prepared shit, I'm like, did that exhaust you? Like, did you want to do that? Like, are you performing that? Did that come naturally to you? Was that easy? Like, Kirsten will often show up with like fresh cut fruit and sliced cheese. And she's so good at like coming with like all of these snacks. And a lot of them like seemed like they took preparation to get together. And she also shows up with Costco snacks, but like I go to Costco and I stock up on individually packaged stuff so that I have it to throw in the bag, because I'm not going to chop sliced cheese up carefully. But the point of it is you not letting the shame of not conforming and just doing your thing that actually feels right and good. It's very easy for me to comfort myself in my lack by like poking holes in someone who is finding some kind of fault in it. And I think the sturdier way that I would like to be is like, that might bring you joy. That might be like the thing that you are really good at that you are able to offer. And it feels really good to be able to give that to your kid. And I rarely show up anywhere without like a bag full of markers and multiple sketchbooks. And, you know, like that comes easy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it makes sense. It's like all of us, like every parent, every person, every caregiver is operating under a different set of assets and limitations. And so it makes sense that we would show up differently because we are working, we're operating in little different planets. Like it makes sense that this would look different. It's okay that it looks different.
We have access to different resources. We have different energy. When my sister was like early postpartum and like isolating and living away from everyone she knew, she was making like sourdough bread from scratch. I would rather stab my eyeballs out. You will never find me, especially if I'm not doing well. Like I would have to be like the most whole and regulated to like start cooking something. But when I was struggling in postpartum, I was like prolifically drawing and working and making all these things. And so neither one of us was white knuckling it, like doing that thing as a performance. It was just like that was the thing that came easily and naturally to us. She was just like making home cooked meals for her and her husband and I. I'm like,
never have I ever. No, I don't.
Never have I ever like soaked beans through the day with an infant. Like, no.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, that was cathartic and helpful to me. Thank you for delving into that with me. Okay. So for our listeners,
like identifying when you're feeling this like jealousy, this comparison, the shame, I think those are all indications that you need to pause and go underneath it. Are you feeling shame just because you feel judged by the other parents? Oh, okay. Maybe, but underneath of that, actually, you want your kid to feel like a certain kind of care and support. What does that look like for you and your kid specifically? How do you show up with that?
What is this actually about?
Yeah. Are you just embarrassed that people think your car looks shitty, but you actually are super proud of it and love it? Okay. Then your work is to let go of that shame. Noticing the markers for when you're falling into this trap and then
creating space to reflect.
Create space to reflect and then figure out what your piece of work is.
Piece of work. Hey, piece of work. All right. Well, thank you for doing that with me. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back soon. All right.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
Woohoo! This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.